Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Danielle, the Bank of Canada just hiking its central rate another 0.5%. Now, are they hiking too fast and too much too quickly for it to have had any impact yet?
They have hiked, well, not just the Bank of Canada, but this whole hiking cycle, the last 6 months in the world, has been the sharpest increase in tightening of monetary conditions on record. So there you have it. And, you know, these are the same folks, these central bank people are the same folks who a year ago told us they didn't expect to hike rates at all in 2022, right? So they are obviously reactionary at all times. And having realized, because again, I've mentioned this so many times, but inflation being a lagging backward-looking indicator. So the inputs they're seeing in the system now, you know, we can tell that the Canadian inflation rate basically peaked in June and has been coming down slowly ever since. So that doesn't mean there's a great relief in things like food costs, which are still hurting people a lot. And there's a lot of people struggling because of the rapid increase in their interest rates on their mortgages and other consumer credit and that sort of thing. So there's a big rate shock going on in the economy. And the thing is that, again, monetary policy works at a multi-month lag. So the hikes they've done so rapidly to date have done a lot to dent consumer sentiment and the ability to access new credit, but they basically haven't worked their way through the overall economy yet. And, you know, basically even what they've done, you know, in July, don't forget they went a full percent rate. That hasn't yet been filtered through into the banking system yet in any significant way. About 40% of, or about a third overall of Canada's mortgages are a variable rate. So there's something that has been directly impacted already by the rapid hike cycle, you know, because they've floated from something like 0.85 a year ago to, you know, closer to 5% now. So that's an incredible, mind-boggling increase. And you hear it, you see it not just in the spending data in all sorts of ways through the economy. You see it in slowing consumption all over the world. But you also hear it anecdotally, I'm sure you do, Jim. There's a lot of people telling stories about friends or neighbors or themselves where they're just like cutting out whole parts of their spending budget or plans or not doing something they intended to do because they simply don't have the cash flow now to do it. And the thing that's really remarkable here, again, unemployment is also a lagging indicator. So it's this horror show they've now set up of racing to catch up to correct for their, you know, too loose for too long last year. They have now set up this tightening process that's going to continue into 2023 and take with it the unemployment rate much higher. So we're starting to see that in, you know, a reduction in the hours worked. We're starting to see that in a preference for part-time jobs over full-time jobs. So the reality is that we are having a whole bunch of credit stress in the economy, not just in Canada, but in Canada in particular, because we came into it with the highest household debt levels of most countries in the world. So we've had this big incredible shock to the household sector, also to the businesses. A lot of corporations were highly indebted in Canada as well coming into this particular, into 2022. So all of that is, you know, just going to intensify as people lose employment, lose more hours worked, lose jobs overall. And so the default cycle, which we've started to see, you know, the trustee in bankruptcy's had a very quiet few years there as governments were handing out money and everyone was borrowing for next to nothing, extending credit. It was all can-kicking, right? We always knew that this was going to come back to bite us because it wasn't actually, you know, said so many times, if people had used low rates to pay off debt and to build up savings, we'd be in an entirely different scenario today. But instead, they did the exact opposite, right? They borrowed as much as possibly could be managed on, you know, every last dollar of cash flow that they had at zero rates. So all that is really unwinding now, and we're facing a pretty stark-looking 2023. Even the Bank of Canada today, as it blinked on that, you know, not going 75 beeps, going 50, one of the things that it noted was that a lot of the hikes it's already got in the pipeline have yet to be felt in the economy, and secondly, they're looking at a growth rate projection in 2023 of less than 1%. So essentially, that's just recognition of what everyone else has been saying now. You know, the mainstream commentators are really coming along. We've got Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan. They're all a warning of an imminent global recession. Even the corporations, you know, that are downgrading their earnings outlook here. Coca-Cola acknowledged they're seeing a downshift in demand globally in a recession, and they're repackaging some of their products to have lower price points. Procter & Gamble noted that consumers are pushing back on price hikes now. They're just not buying. You know, they basically run out of ability to add in some higher-priced products, and they're cutting back on demand all over. So that's another thing that's quite evident in the data. Even in places like China, you know, China has been the running to the rescue of the world the last 15 years. Every time there was a downturn, they would add debt to their system. They would rev up speculation leverage in their property sector, in their stock market, all that. And now, you know, their prices have been falling. In China, home prices have been falling for the last 2 years. They're off at least 15% nationally on average in the big cities. And companies like Tesla, you know, reported recently and said that they're now having to cut prices from 5 to 9% because of weaker demand in China. So there's no China rushing to the rescue here. They're very much trying to, you know, go back to sort of an old world order where globalization and credit are not the elixirs that free up everyone. And now the weight of the habits that we've taken on in the past couple of years are weighing down on everything. So I think, you know, we've earned this period. This downturn is global. As I said, it's Canada is in good company, so to speak, but that doesn't mean it won't be painful and difficult for a lot of people on a micro level.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, have these higher interest rates started to see a new wave of mortgage defaults and loan defaults?
Well, the trustee in bankruptcy people publish reports monthly, and up until the last few months, they were still saying, you know, that the levels of default are still below what they were in 2019. So again, I think people have really tried to do everything in their power to continue paying their mortgage in particular, and to extend credit where possible to sort of keep the game going. But what's happening now, of course, is that we're seeing that, you know, the people who bought in the last couple of years, a good many of them are already underwater in terms of equity in their property. So that means that they've run out of room, so to speak, in terms of adding more debt. You're seeing that sort of thing show up in refinance, because a lot of, again, a trend was as prices were galloping higher in the last couple of years and rates were low, people were refinancing, right, taking money out of that notional equity improvement and spending it to keep their sort of life going. Well, of course, that's no longer an option, and the appraisal companies are not able to give appraisals now to allow there to be any, you know, increase in that refi money out sort of scenario. So that's really come to an end as well. And so at some point, we are starting to see a pickup in defaults, and I think the final nub, so to speak, comes, it's kind of like what's happening in the equity markets too, where the retail people were so conditioned over the past few years to buy dips and to think that, don't worry, you know, keep gambling because central banks won't let anything go down, you know, they'll run to the rescue, the governments will save us. And there's that petition going around right now, right, of homeowners in Canada demanding that they get some sort of relief. The irony, of course, in all that is that no one was complaining as prices were going up at unsustainable levels. Well, I was, but few people were. And there is no savior that can come to your rescue of reckless financial decisions. Even though you were encouraged by policymakers to make them, at some point here, you know, there needs to be lessons learned, as painful as that is. And so defaults will spike, I believe, as people realize that property prices are not bouncing back. Just like in the equity markets, we see, you know, for example, this month, enormous ETF inflows continue through this period where stocks have been falling year to date. A lot of people are saying they're very bearish and pessimistic as they look at the economy, but they are still gambling. You know, so what's interesting there is you never get a market bottom, whether it be housing or whether it be in things like stocks, until you get a capitulation, and that requires a washout selling. So that requires people to finally say, I'm not going to keep carrying this, you know, whether it's a second property they bought, like a recreational property or a rental property that now is underwater and has negative carry, and they're just gasping for cash flow, so they're saying, you know what, I'm going to cut my losses here and sell this property. So we haven't seen a lot of listings yet come onto the market in that regard. And I think until that happens, you know, you might, you're not going to have this sort of really get a sense of how deep this decline is in terms of price. We know that there, you know, there's very few new home sales going on. Toronto's data just came out, 96% year-over-year decline in the new single-family home sales. 96%. But this is because last September was bonkers, as we've talked about before. Same with new condo sales in the Greater Toronto Area. They're off 89% year over year in September. So, you know, again, there's very few people that are able or willing to buy properties in this environment, or to even make lateral moves. And so it's a slow moving process to some degree, and I think we're going to see it continue to play out over the next year or two. Housing downturns can go on for, you know, several years and then stay sideways for a decade. Like, that's literally the type of beast it is. So just because things are slow moving or backward looking, I think we have to be careful in assuming that, you know, we've already seen the worst of this. I think far from it.
Could we see a house or a home shortage, because right now developers say they're very reluctant to build because with rising mortgage rates, people can't afford to buy those new homes?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a shortage at this point. Of course, there will be again at some point in the future. But at this point, what we see is we have record inventories. Mm. We have a lot of projects that were, you know, so far along the completion. Even just in the area I live, north of Toronto, there is a record number of condo buildings and apartment buildings being built presently. And we've seen already a downturn in rent inflation because of the amount of properties that are being put on the market. A lot of the ones that were, for example, again, a lot of people bought second properties in the pandemic, either for rental or vacation rental or, you know, to use themselves, which they are now looking to lower costs. And so, you know, when they feel like they can't sell for what they got, what they paid for it, or they're underwater, the first impulse is to try and rent it. And of course, we've seen that increase in properties for rent. But there's a lot of supply that's already on the past point of no return, so to speak, unless the companies go bankrupt, which has commonly happened in prior housing bubbles where, you know, they basically end up having to go bankrupt and some other company comes in and finishes the project. But there's a lot of product in coming down the pipeline. So I think that for the next period, that's going to greatly outweigh the amount of buyers who are, as I say, ready, willing, and able to execute.
Could there be a deliberately caused recession so that the labor shortage in Canada, people will take those vacant jobs because they're desperate for work?
Oh, well, make no mistake, this is a deliberately caused recession. The central banks of the world have not said it exactly like that, but they've said that they need to slow demand. Even the Bank of Canada said it today. They said consumers are still trying to buy more goods than we can produce safely without causing an inflationary spike. And that feeds in directly to employment. So they fully intend to increase the unemployment rate. And in past recessions, I mean, Canada's unemployment rate is just above 5%. It's quite typical to see that go above 8% in recessions. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but that, you know, 3% of job loss is big for the economy at the margin. And so that is an intentional thing that is happening, is to try and, you know, again, slow demand, crush prices, bring down the workforce to have this slowdown in our consumption ability. So that's all happening on purpose, and will continue to happen through into 2023, which is why we see the recession continuing, and at least through the first half of 2023, and potentially, you know, it could go on even longer than that. So eventually there will be some rebalancing of the workforce. Now, you know, we still have the demographic trends, the long-term secular trends of an aging population that could challenge certain sectors in terms of needing jobs. We also have this online workforce now, which makes people not necessarily have to take jobs in their own geographical location, but can take jobs that are offered from companies all around the world if they're working online. So this is going to create all sorts of ebb and flow in the job market. But yes, right now the big trend we're seeing is a lot of people trying to find second jobs, additional shifts in order to, as I say, increase their cash flow. So that kind of thing is likely going to take up any additional, you know, any jobs that were short. We're getting people more inclined to take on those extra shifts now. So that will be part of rectifying that issue that was prevalent during the pandemic.
So many restaurants have staff shortages. Many aren't open on Mondays and Tuesdays. Then they have reduced hours. Do you think people will go back to being serving staff, or are shorter hours, shorter working days going to be more common in the restaurant industry?
Well, you've got those, again, on a micro level, you've got restaurants that have had a unique shock in terms of the pandemic and closed down, the closed downs, where people said, oh, I'm very vulnerable in this profession because I, you know, can't necessarily even work when I want to. So you've had a migration of labor away from that particular sector. And some of those people will never want to come back if they can avoid it. But recessions have a very sobering effect on everyone, right? We have to reevaluate our ideas of what we will or will not do. And of course, there's also an awful lot of restaurants in the world today. And they also require customers to come in and spend money. And in a recession, it's quite common to see a downturn in that sector in terms of the customers willing to come in. So, you know, the two themes will have to find some balance.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.